Imagine waking up and reaching for someone who's no longer there. Your brain knows they've died, yet somehow expects them to walk through the door at any moment. This isn't denial or hallucination, it's your neural circuitry struggling with an impossible computational problem. Our brains have evolved sophisticated systems to track important people across three dimensions: space, here, time, and psychological closeness, our attachment bond. When someone dies, these mapping systems face a fundamental challenge they weren't designed to solve: permanent absence. The widow who glimpses her husband in his favorite chair isn't losing her mind. Her brain's prediction system is simply doing what it evolved to do, filling in expected patterns based on years of experience. After decades together, neurons that repeatedly fired in connection with a loved one remain physically wired together, creating expectations that persist despite death. This explains why religions worldwide address where deceased loved ones go and when we'll see them again. These frameworks provide concrete answers to questions our brains desperately need resolved. Beyond tracking physical location, our brains map psychological closeness, a dimension particularly challenging after loss. This invisible dimension can be visualized as overlapping circles representing our connection to others. When someone dies, our brain struggles to comprehend that this dimension no longer applies. Instead, it may interpret their absence as emotional withdrawal, similar to being ghosted in a relationship. From our brain's perspective, death resembles ghosting. Our loved one has inexplicably stopped responding. This misunderstanding triggers emotions beyond sadness, including anger, guilt, and rumination about what we could have done differently. Neuroimaging confirms the brain uses the same region, right inferior parietal lobule, to compute distances across time, space, and psychological closeness. The posterior cingulate cortex tracks our feeling of closeness to others, while the hippocampus maps this social navigation similar to physical spaces. These findings show how our sense of connection exists in the physical hardware of our brain. When we form close relationships, our identities overlap in our brain's wiring. Unlike transactional relationships where we track equal exchanges, attachment relationships involve selfless support regardless of reciprocation. This merging transforms you and me into we, extending to shared possessions, experiences, and memories. After loss, this overlap contracts painfully, leaving us questioning our identity. Many bereaved people confirm the accuracy of feeling like part of themselves died. Our brains compute psychological closeness as self-other overlap, similar to how drivers extend their bodily awareness to include their car. Mirror neurons provide evidence for this biological basis of closeness, firing both when we perform actions and when we observe others performing the same actions. This neural mechanism explains how loved ones become encoded in our brains and why grief feels like losing part of ourselves. This also explains parasocial grief for celebrities we've never met. Famous personalities can meet attachment criteria by being available through their work and feeling special to us, with musicians creating particular intimacy through lyrics that speak to our deepest feelings. When someone we love dies, we experience a contradiction, intellectually knowing they're gone while feeling they might return. This isn't delusion, but reflects how different neural systems produce competing forms of knowledge. Evolution has programmed us to believe loved ones will return despite contrary evidence. Ancestors who waited for partners to return with food gave their offspring better survival chances. Like emperor penguins fasting for months while incubating eggs, humans have evolved attachment mechanisms resistant to updating. The memory of our loved one isn't just a memory. It's tagged with special importance in our neural circuitry, creating a belief that this one will return. Our loved ones physically exist in our neural wiring even after they're gone. Grieving takes longer than other learning because of these conflicting brain systems. While we easily understand that last semester students won't return, believing a loved one is permanently gone contradicts the attachment bonds encoded to expect them here, now, and close. Separation from a loved one creates a physical sensation, like heartstrings being pulled from your chest. These attachment bonds connect us to loved ones, motivate us to return to them, and create a feeling of absence when separated. Prairie and Montane voles reveal key bonding mechanisms. Despite genetic similarity, prairie voles form lifelong monogamous bonds after mating, while Montane voles remain polygamous. The difference lies in receptor distribution. Monogamous prairie voles have more oxytocin receptors in the nucleus accumbens, a region crucial for human bonding too. Neuroimaging studies show this same nucleus accumbens region distinguishes complicated grief from resilient grieving. Those with complicated grief show greater activation in this reward processing area. The stronger someone yearned for their deceased loved one, the higher their nucleus accumbens activation. This suggests people with complicated grief continue to predict rewarding outcomes from reuniting with their loved one, while resilient grievers no longer maintain this prediction, representing a normal motivational state similar to hunger or thirst. Research reveals that yearning has a stronger association with grief than with depression. Yearning thoughts emerge suddenly and involuntarily, like spontaneously visualizing your father cooking while looking in your refrigerator. Though voluntary and involuntary memories occur with similar frequency after stressful events, the involuntary ones feel more distressing because they catch us emotionally unprepared. During bereavement, our brain continues sending mental push notifications about important people, now conflicting with reality and triggering grief pangs. Studies of grieving people's facial expressions show they display diverse emotions when discussing deceased loved ones. The best predictor of mental health is having varied emotional regulation strategies and using them appropriately. While Western culture values grief work, like sharing stories about the deceased or journaling, research indicates activities that generate positive emotions can be more effective at reducing sadness. Positive emotions broaden attention, foster creative thinking, and expand coping tools, creating what psychologists call an upward spiral. Grieving is fundamentally a form of learning. Our brain must update its predictions when a loved one dies, as we no longer expect them in our daily lives. We learn they no longer exist in the dimensions of here, now, and close that we've come to expect. This learning isn't like riding a bike. It's adapting to an alien planet with different rules. When grief feels stuck, seek new strategies from someone experienced with grief, whether a pastor, grandmother, novelist, or psychologist. Death transforms us. Understanding that loved ones can disappear forever changes how we love and what we value. Though we wouldn't choose grief, passing through it connects us to others with similar experiences, revealing insights about ourselves and our brain's capacity to adapt. Our brains weren't designed to comprehend permanent absence, but were built to learn. Eventually, neural pathways that caused pain can be rewired to hold our loved ones differently, not as someone returning, but as someone who continues to influence us. The bond transforms rather than ends.